morning is Zhang v. Holder, case number 12-1596. Mr. Lowe.
Good morning, Your Honors. As it may please the Court, my name is Raymond Lowe. I represent the petitioner, Bei Zhang, in his appeal of BIA's decision to deny his motion to reopen. I'm going to go straight into the procedural aspects, and then the facts I would discuss it if it needs to be. BIA denied my client's motion to reopen based on that in his past proceedings, his ineffective assistance of counsel, he did not show prejudice. BIA, in its decision, said that they agreed that my client met the matter of Lazada, that they agreed that we substantially complied with the guidelines, yet they denied because they said that the petition did not show prejudicial fact and they did not show due diligence. And this case is a little bit convoluted because it goes back and forth of the proceedings that happened prior. The prejudicial fact in this case was that my client, previous attorney, was disbarred in 2004. And subsequently, it was until 2009 that it was fully disbarred by EOIR, BIA, and barred from practice of law. But during his representation of my client in 2002 to 2003, he represented my client in his immigration hearing in front of the immigration judge. He represented him during the BIA appeal that was filed, and he represented him in front of this court in 2004. BIA's discussion how there's no prejudicial harm of this ineffective system of counsel is wrong in the sense that the previous attorney touched everything in this case. The previous attorney, in the immigration judge's decision, the immigration judge stated that there's a piece of evidence, a birth certificate of the son. On the record, the immigration judge faulted the previous attorney for not accurately translating that document. It was an incomplete translation. And, you know, during the hearing, there's a big issue regarding this translation, regarding the accuracy of this document. And later on, in the immigration judge's decision, he denied my client's claims based on an adverse credibility finding, based on the partly on the birth certificate, partly on a fine receipt, and partly on a couple of photos. In the BIA decision, BIA basically did not even mention this issue. BIA said that you show no prejudicial fact, and there's a disconnect. BIA stated in their decision the respondent did not have a viable cohesive population control claim for asylum, withholding, and cap protection. But the immigration judge did not deny his claim because of his did not deny his claims based on the proof. He denies claims based on the credibility. And in BIA's decision, they're arguing the opposite. They're arguing that the immigration judge denied you because you don't have a claim. But that's not true.
You've got a threshold issue about timeliness here and equitable tolling.
Yes, yes. Let's get to that.
So
basically, moving on, the previous attorney filed a BIA appeal. The BIA appeal was, for lack of a better word, a two-page summarization with no argument. Then the attorney filed the federal appeal to this court, and this court subsequently dismissed the appeal because the previous attorney never filed a brief, and subsequently the previous attorney also was disbarred by this court. Now, the tolling issue is that my client did not know the situation. My client was told by his attorney, well, ex-attorney at the time in 2004, that you lost your case. There's nothing you can be done. You know, we cannot go on. You know, you should give up. There's no more hope. He relied on his attorney's word, but at the time, his attorney was disbarred by this court and no longer able to practice. His attorney never disclosed to him that that your denial was because I didn't file your brief. It's not because of the merits, because, you know, that's the soul of this. So he did not. So my client did not know what happened until 2010, 2011. When he retained me, and we did a FOIA, we looked at his case, and then I did research, and I found out that in 2009, 2010, the Board of Immigration Appeals, the EOIR, and everybody disbarred him because of his incompetence. And the fact in the decision that regarding the previous counsel, this court mentioned that one of the reasons why it disbarred the previous attorney was that that widespread formal and substantive deficiencies in briefs profoundly disturbed gross incompetence. This court stated that about this attorney.
Right. The problem is that's back in 2004.
Yes, but this information was not published and notarized until 2009, 2010, when the BIA EOIR finally took away his license and blocked him from.
He's supposed to exercise due diligence in order to gain from an argument in favor of equitable tolling based on ineffective assistance of counsel, and he basically ignored the removal order, stayed in this country for 6 more years,
but that's
and then
not
moved to reopen.
In that issue, his reliance on his attorney, who was already disbarred at the time, he relied on him as an attorney. His attorney told him that you lost on your merits. The attorney did not tell him that you lost because I got disbarred and I couldn't file your brief. If that's not ineffective assistance of counsel, how does he know that he was harmed by his previous attorney? He is a person of middle school education. He doesn't speak no English. He went to this attorney. He paid the attorney to file the federal brief. The attorney took the money in the retainer, gave him a receipt, never filed it, and subsequently told him that you lost your case. Going forward, regarding his Catholic claim, my client became a Catholic in 2009, 2010. He presented documentation to BIA regarding the change of circumstances in China and the danger of being a Catholic in China. We submitted proof from Catholic.org, documents stating, you know, that in 2010 the Pope made a speech regarding that he was strongly worded statements that he was troubled by the oppression in China. These two articles were not discussed by BIA, were not even reviewed by BIA. In BIA's decision to deny, they stated, and I quote, Fujian province was not mentioned in the two reports and one article. We find that the respondent's country conditions evidence shows at best a continuation of problems unregistered Catholic groups in Fujian province rather than changed country conditions. But if you look at the country report for 2011, and it states very clearly that in March, authorities arrested and or detained a number of priests operating unregistered Catholic churches in Fujian province. Cases include March 19 arrest of Lu Maochun and detention of Guo Xing and Miu Yang. So what BIA say is that the country report didn't mention about Fujian, but as I just read it, that was in the country report. The country report did mention Fujian. So it troubles me that did BIA properly review all the evidence when they dismissed and denied his motion to reopen? Because based on what they say, based on what the proof we have on record, there's a disconnect. And also based on what they state about previously, that BIA claims that the immigration judge denied him because of his claim is wrong, because the immigration judge denied him because of his credibility factors. The credibility factors I did discuss in my brief regarding the birth certificate, regarding the photos, and regarding the document of his fine receipts.
Counsel, do you agree that it's necessary to show a change in country conditions under these circumstances?
Well, in this essence, country conditions is that BIA is referring that, well, in 2003, when you had this hearing, the Chinese country conditions regarding the Catholics were like this. And in 2011, when you filed, they're the same. But they're not the same. From 2003 to 2011, the oppression, the persecution of unregistered groups by the Chinese government has increased.
If it's still terrible, should we worry about that?
Well, you should worry, because he's a baptized Catholic. If he goes back, he's going to practice his faith. And he's not going to practice his faith with the government-sanctioned church. He's going to practice his faith with the church according to the Vatican and the Pope. I'm going to reserve my rebuttal time for afterwards.
Mr. Leo.
Good Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. Attorney Sabatino F. Leo on behalf of the United States Attorney General. The main issue before this Court is whether the Board acted within its broad discretion when it denied petitioner's untimely motion to reopen. Generally speaking, as this Court has recognized, a motion to reopen must be filed within 90 days following the final administrative hearing or the final administrative decision. However, in cases of motions to reopen with respect to claims for ineffective assistance of counsel, that 90 days may be tolled. And that 90 days may be tolled for a reasonable amount of time. It cannot be tolled in ad infinitum, in infinity. And what this Court has said in its Purvey's decision, in its Johnson decision, and in its Gao decision, is that it's basically a two-step process to make that determination of whether or not petitioner acted with due diligence in filing the motion to reopen. And that is whether and when a reasonable person in the petitioner's position would have discovered the ineffective assistance, and two, the petitioner then bears the burden to show that he exercised due diligence in the filing of the motion to reopen. And I think what the major concern here is, and as this Court has recognized, is that it's 6+ years from the final administrative decision until this petitioner went ahead and filed the motion to reopen based upon his effective assistance of counsel. And what is also important to note is that petitioner's affidavit in support of his motion to reopen sheds very little to no light whatsoever with respect to his actions during that course of time, during those 6+ years, meaning he failed to establish or to satisfy his burden. What he does says is that in July of 2004, he's notified that his federal appeal is dismissed. He does indicate that he met with his counsel of record and indicates with his counsel of record that his case is dead and that he's given up hope. I submit to this Court that simply being told that and giving up hope does not allow a petitioner to sit down and rest on his or her laurels for a number of years prior to making that determination of whether to file a motion to reopen based upon ineffective assistance of counsel. He clearly was informed that his federal appeal was denied. He admits to that in his affidavit. He clearly, of his own volition, can go about and find out the status of his case or other factors involved in this particular case. He was introduced to this attorney by a friend or an employer. He could have found out further information.
How does, if you're told you've lost, we generally encourage people to accept the decisions of this Court on the merits and not to dig further into whether there's some conceivable way to bring a collateral challenge based on their counsel. How is this guy who doesn't speak English supposed to figure out and learn that he lost because his counsel was so awful?
I think based upon this Court's reasoning in its prior decisions, as I discussed it, there is some onus on the reasonable person in petitioner's circumstance to go about and make that determination. Now, petitioner says that, well, much of this ineffective assistance has to do with an improper mistranslation. Well, that should have been known to petitioner during the course of the proceedings. Should it not have been? And that's what, and so my position is, he's informed that his case, he lost his case. He's informed by his attorney he's given up hope. He cannot now sit back for 6+ years and just say, my case is over, I'm done, I have no onus on my part. Would a reasonable person in that circumstance just simply accept defeat when there was at least a thought, at least a small light that went on in petitioner's head during these proceedings, that there may or may not have been a mistranslation with respect to the document? And not only that, and as I indicated, the affidavit in the support of his motion to reopen sheds zero light. And it is the government's submission that fails to satisfy his burden, as this Court has identified and has addressed it. It's his burden to show that he engaged diligently. And it simply cannot be said that 6+ years prior to filing that motion to reopen with respect to ineffective assistance is engaging in due diligence. And in any event, and I'll go and just to take it a step further with respect to prejudice, this Court has determined, well, okay, if there is a motion to reopen and it is diligently filed and it's equitably told and you could file a motion to reopen based upon ineffective assistance of counsel, you still have to show prejudice. And this Court in David versus Ashcroft has said actual prejudice, egregious errors that actually affected the outcome of the proceedings. And I submit to this Court at this time that the reason petitioner lost before the immigration judge was based upon his own testimony. And even though petitioner sets forth to this court that there's a concern regarding the mistranslation of the birth certificate, during the testimony, petitioner was asked about the birth certificate. And one particular fact remained clear, that it was a Ministry of Health issued birth certificate, which flew in the face of his claim that he had to remain underground for a year plus because of the birth of this child had to remain a secret the government could not find out. And that's only one aspect, Your Honors, with respect to the actual prejudice, with respect to the birth certificate that the petitioner calls out in his brief. More importantly, there are a number of the receipt for the payment of the fine and the photograph. These are all show in contradiction to his testimony. And just in a, and so I say, petitioner failed to act with due diligence following his motion to reopen. And that in and of itself, the board was within its discretion, its broad discretion, to deny the motion to reopen. And even if this court would see fit that he engaged in some due diligence, that he never presented any actual prejudice as a result of his filings with respect to the immigration court. Briefly, with regard to the motion to reopen, based upon his personal change and conversion to Christianity, what is important to recognize is that he must have established not only a change in country conditions, a material change in country conditions, not incremental, not further exacerbated, but a material change. And I submit to this court that the record is clear, and as the board recognized, that he did not satisfy his burden with regard to a material change of country conditions. And what's important to note for this court is that, and it's said countless times, is that a change in personal circumstances in the United States does not show changed country conditions or changed circumstances. And that's the Ling Jing case. And what's important to recognize there, and as this court has recognized, as indicated in Chen versus Gonzalez, it makes no sense to allow an alien who manages to elude capture for a number of years and has been ordered to leave the country, which this petitioner has been, and has exhausted all his legal remedies, to use this interval of unauthorized presence to manufacture a case of asylum.
Why isn't a credibility finding as to the sincerity of a religious conversion sufficient to address that concern?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Let's take the hypothetical situation in which somebody has a sincere and legitimate conversion to a faith where they will be persecuted if they are returned, whether it's to China or Iran or pick a country. If we know that that person is going to be persecuted, should we send them back anyway?
And
I understand the skepticism, but why isn't an evaluation for credibility and sincerity sufficient to protect the government's interests in such cases?
This is in a context of a motion to reopen, Your Honor. And with regard to the context of a motion to reopen, there's not a credibility finding per se with regard to testimony of the particular individual. Now, that argument could be made if it's before the immigration judge in a conversion in an asylum application. This is a motion to reopen. Why? Because there's already skepticism, Your Honor, because this individual had already lost and was already ordered. And so what it would do is it would fly in the face of reason to now suspect that this particular petitioner found religion, a particular religion that would lead to persecution in a country he was trying to leave and which he lost on X number of years prior. So in the context of motions to reopen, Your Honor, I think your hypothetical would not apply. And at the end of the day, Your Honor, I feel as though the petition for review in this particular case should be denied. Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time? Mr. Lowe, you have 1 minute left.
The whole issue is, counsel says he lost. He did not get a fair chance to present his case. He lost. The immigration judge during the immigration hearings based on defective translation and because of credibility issues.
Well,
I understand. His attorney filed a BIA brief appealing the decision. In that BIA brief, that brief is poor, doesn't make any arguments, that's ineffective assistance of counsel. He never had a chance to argue why his testimony was credible, which was argued in the federal brief that I submitted before Your Honors. And secondly, the due diligence, the 9 years, he relied on his attorney. His attorney mistranslated. Of course, he didn't tell him that he's mistranslated. Why would he hire the same guy to file his appeal? Why would he hire the same guy to file his federal appeal? Obviously, he trusted his attorney, thinking that he was doing a good job. That's why he stuck by him. After this trusted attorney told him, you lost, he gave up. I mean, he's a person. Is he supposed to kind of manufacture another claim, try to do something else to extend it? He was told that he's lost, and he got the notice from this court saying that his appeal was dismissed. He thought it was dismissed on the merits.
Mr. Lowe, your time has expired. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The next case.